Hi, I'm Catherine Salon. I'm a master's student at the University of Florida, and I work in Dr. Jim Olmsted's Blueberry Breeding Lab. Today, I'm going to be talking to you about working towards genomic selection, a new approach in blueberry breeding. I'll start off by giving you a little bit of background on blueberries. As many of you know, they've become very popular recently, and this is in part due to their health benefits and also greater availability because new varieties increase the geographical production area. Florida has especially seen this growth, with blueberry production quadrupling since 2005. This is in part due to the southern highbush blueberries produced by the University of Florida, Vexillimicorum bosum. The southern highbush is bred and selected for its low chill, early ripening traits, which makes it well suited for Florida's climate. Currently, it's being bred using phenotypic recurrent selection, which takes about 10 to 15 years to release a cultivar. Genomic selection has been successfully used to decrease the selection cycle in livestock breeding programs. Best linear unbiased prediction, BLUP, along with restricted maximum likelihood, are common methods used in genomic selection, and they're used to estimate the variance components, so heritability, genetic correlations, and breeding values. You can then take this information and rank your breeding germplasm in order to select superior parents, families, and individuals. So BLUP allows you to analyze a large amount of data using mixed models and expected covariances derived from genetic relationships. These covariances are included using matrices called the numerator relationship matrix, or the A matrix, and it can be derived using pedigree information or information from molecular markers. For this study, we're just going to focus on making the A matrix using the pedigree information. And what's great about this is that you can obtain estimated breeding values not only for the population that you phenotype and tested, but also the relatives you've included in the pedigree, even though they were not phenotyped. And you're able to do this because they'll all share some alleles, so the response will be correlated and thus it can be predicted. So what exactly is an A matrix? Well, on the right I have a very small example of the blueberry pedigree dating from the early 1900s. They're Frederick Koval's first selections. And then on the right you can see how that translates into the A matrix. So the individuals are ordered chronologically, with the founders first. And then you see on this diagonal all these ones. That's the individual's relationship with itself. So basically it tells you if the individual's inbred at all. A value of one indicates that it's not inbred, which you'd expect from the very tiny pedigree. And on the off diagonal, you have the kinship coefficient, which is the individual's relationship with another individual. For example, Soy and Brooks have a value of zero because they're both wild selections, so you would expect them to be unrelated. Now, Soy and Catherine have a value of 0.5, and that's because Soy is one of Catherine's parents, so you'd expect them to share half the genome. As I said, this has been very successful in livestock breeding programs, but it has not really caught on in autopolyploid species, and that's because there's different segregation ratios, so it makes the construction of the A matrix a little harder and more complicated. And cultivated blueberries are autotetraploids, and they fall into this category, having a more complex inheritance pattern. And this is because, as Patty mentioned, there are four homologous chromosomes, and each of these chromosomes have an equal opportunity to pair, creating either bivalence or multivalence. And the multivalence you can see are these little ring structures here. So there's a combination of the multivalence and the bivalence in this blueberry diagenesis phase. So why is this important? As I mentioned, it complicates allele segregation ratios and can potentially alter the distribution of the alleles in the population, making it different from the diploid model. And autopolyploids experience a phenomenon known as double reduction, which further complicates things. and it creates inbreeding even when the two parents are unrelated, so you would assume no inbreeding occurred. Not much is known about this, and so that's why you have different theoretical maximums from 1/6 to 1/25 depending on the assumptions used. So what exactly is double reduction? Well, first, it requires multivalent formation, so those little circles, and then crossing over between non-sister chromatids. These sister chromatids migrate to the same pole in anaphase 1 and then again in anaphase 2, so they end up having identical copies of alleles in the same gamete, creating the inbreeding when you thought there would be none. So there has been one study done, double reduction in blueberries, and this used 4 isoenzyme markers and found no double reduction. But because double reduction is a position-dependent phenomenon, it depends on which chromosome or chromosomes it's on, and also where on that chromosome that trait is located. So a more thorough study needs to be done. The objective of our study was to lay the foundation to use genomic selection and genomic selection estimated breeding values in our program. So we developed an R package to construct a relationship matrix modeling the complicated autotetraploid inheritance, and we used different levels of double reduction from 0 to 0.25 because the maximum is not known. We will then compare the effects of autotetraploidy and double reduction on heritability estimates and estimated breeding values. And we did this for a variety of traits, but I'm just going to focus on fruit firmness and fruit size diameter for this talk. So what exactly is going on in the A matrix, and why is it affected by the tetrasomic inheritance? So have the A matrix, assuming diploid inheritance, on the right, and then just so you can get a good idea, I show the extreme of tetrasomic inheritance with double reduction of 0.25. Looking at the individual's inbreeding with itself, you can automatically see it went from no inbreeding to inbreeding, and then these values for Catherine and Stanley have increased more than the others, and that's because they have more pedigree history, and the more pedigree history there is, it acts kind of as a snowballing effect and creates a more impact on double reduction. You can also see it affects the other relationships, increasing them, and this is important because blood draws power from these relationships. So the higher a relationship is, the more power it will draw, and the more correlated that response will be, so it could skew your breeding values, giving you inaccurate results. But the individuals assumed unrelated still stayed at 0. So to find the best mode of inheritance for each trait, we took data from 2,000 genotypes in a mixed population, and we modeled them in ASReml using different levels of double reduction, including a diploid model to use as a standard. Now, the diploid model fit the worst according to the AIC value, which tells you how well a model fits. And so we took that difference from the tetraploid difference and modeled it in this graph. So basically, what I want to say is that the larger y-axis numbers, the better the model fit. It's very clear for fruit size, the blue line, that the tetrasomic inheritance with no double reduction fit the best, whereas firmness, all the models seem to fit the same, but the model assuming 15% double reduction was the best fit. So then we're going to use these numbers to estimate heritability and their breeding values. So for heritability, you can see that on the x-axis we have the diploid assuming disomic inheritance, and then tetrasomic inheritance with increasing double reduction. So the heritability decreases as double reduction increases. But for fruit size, because we're just using the best fit models, there's not much difference between the tetrasomic and disomic models. But for firmness, because 0.15 fit the best, there is a bit of a larger difference. And how does this affect your breeding values? Well, we compared the disomic breeding values against the autotetraploid breeding values using double reduction of 0.15 for firmness, since that fits the best. And you can see there's a very strong correlation between the breeding values. The same is true for fruit size diameter, comparing again the diastolic estimated breeding values and then the autotetraploid estimated breeding values, but this time with no double reduction, but still very strong correlation. So especially for these two traits, the complex mathematical way you set up the A matrix will give you better breeding values, but also you can get reasonable results from using the diploid model. So it shouldn't be a limitation to using this in the program. So in summary, double reduction increases the inbreeding between relatives, affecting A matrix construction. Heritability decreases with tetrasomic inheritance and increasing double reduction. And there is a strong correlation between the estimated breeding values, assuming diastolic and tetrasomic inheritance, for fruit size and firmness. These calculated estimated breeding values, assuming the proper level of double reduction, will help set the baseline in order to use domic selection estimated breeding values in this program for the future. Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge the USDA grant that funded this, and Jim Olmsted, Patricia Munoz, and Matthias Kirst, and the rest of the breeding lab at UF.
You know, in potatoes, going, which is also tetra and auto tetra,
yes,
going back many years, there were suggestions that pollen competition within this aisle actually decreased inbreeding.
I think that was in one of your papers.
Do you think there's anything like that in blueberries?
I definitely think there can be. I'm sorry. He mentioned that in potatoes there was evidence for pollen competition and was wondering if there's anything like that in blueberries. I'm not quite sure the answer, but I definitely think there's a possibility that there could be.
And I don't know the answer either.
Okay.
It's something to think about, though, in some of these cases.
Yes.
Obviously, you've got the potential of four alleles in a locus. Do you know how frequently that expectation is met, maybe not in a mapping study?
The question was how often the frequency of...
The expectation of four alleles.
The expectation of four alleles at a locus are... I do not know the answer because I didn't do any molecular marker work, but...
The reason I ask is I understand a potato, I'm not a potato person, that they don't meet that expectation.
Okay.
Most of the time.
That's very interesting to look at.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.